keep them in your home or love to see them in theirs. These are the creatures that bring us all together.
Reptiles. We're going to be delving into the experiences of reptile lovers from around the block and around the world. This is the Reptile Talk Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is Jeremy Turgeon from Brassman Reptiles.
And I'm Rob, and I'm creeping it real.
And episode 31.
31.
We're kicking it off with an awesome guest.
Super excited. We've got Matt from Peach State Pythons. How are you doing tonight, man?
Doing fantastic. Glad to be here. Drum roll and everything. Test run. We're feeling good.
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I leave it all up to Jeremy.
There's a good energy in here. I don't know if you guys feel it.
Oh, I feel it. I'm feeling it right now.
That's called Taco Bell.
No, Jeremy, no. So, Matt, for the people who might not know who you are or like the kind of what you do, how did you get your start in reptiles? Are you like a lifelong reptile fan or something that you got into a little bit later? For those who don't know you, where did you get your start?
So I got to go lifelong on this.
Hell yeah.
We got to go way back. I guess when you're growing up, you like something. I don't know, Cowboys, Indians, Army. You know, I'm talking little when I was young. And I was a dinosaur guy.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yep. Okay. So I even had second or third grade, can't remember what age, had a dinosaur birthday party. I was rocking my Tyrannosaurus Rex shirt.
Mm.
That's kind of where it started. And so I got to also touch on this. I was living in Alaska at the time.
Whoa.
And I think this is where it like, yeah, this is where it kind of like grew because there's no reptiles in Alaska. So as I'm maturing into the fourth grade era, you start moving away from dinosaurs and maybe start getting into the real animals. And so I just kind of had this fascination with the reptiles. Then we go from Alaska, move to Georgia, and I can just go outside and flip over some rocks and there's a reptile. And so I grew up kind of like being fascinated by them, reading about them, and now I can actually go catch my own. And it was wild. And I remember we moved to Georgia, and my mom, there's this pond that she'd go walk around. She's like, Matt, you know, we're going to take you with me today. And went over there, and there was turtles swimming, which isn't anything crazy, but I lost my mind because I'd never seen that. There's like, I was like, Mom, there are 20 turtles out there. And so from there, it just snowballed. You know, I went to the school in fourth grade, moved to school. My dad was in the military, so moved around a lot. And they had like 3 reptile books. And I think you guys are my age-ish. You check out the book and you write on the index card,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And it was like, Matt Bowers. Yep. Check it out. Anyways, for some reason, never grew out of it. Was always keeping. So, yeah, so since I moved to Georgia about fourth grade, I've always kind of kept them. And then as I an adult and I can have more, it kind of, you know, how it goes. It goes from 4 to 8 to 40 somehow.
And more sometimes.
That's pretty accurate. Yeah. So, you know, 1 to 70, you know.
Yeah. Right? And so, yeah, I guess you'd go ahead and mark me down as a lifer.
Hell yeah.
That's awesome.
I definitely had that similar thing where I was super into dinosaurs when I was really little. And I had dinosaur birthday parties and all that sort of stuff. And I even to this day, one of my friends, Kyle, he actually works in paleontology. And whenever he comes out and visits, he's like, you're one of the only person that can like actually talk dinosaurs with me. And I'm like, I used to be so into that stuff. And I haven't lost a lot of it. I still retain a lot of it.
I knew there's a lot of similarities between us, Rob.
Yeah, man.
So the synergy's there.
Yeah.
You know, I told you I had that dreamed about you one night. I mean, there's something there. Maybe it's the dinosaur thing. I don't know.
Same wavelength. We're there.
Yeah, that'll be it.
So what does your collection look like now? I know you keep a pretty good variety of different things. So you post some Pituophis today, and you're big into the retics and the berms, and you even have some ball pythons and stuff. So what does your collection look like now?
I think you just did it.
Way to go, Rob.
Sorry.
Right, yeah. So nailed it. Good research. Knowing who you're talking to. Started out with berms, and so I got into the berms before the Lacey Act opened up, and Georgia had kind of, in a sense, dried up a little bit with the berms. There's a few here and there, and I just kind of made it a mission to get them. Then, you know, there's only so many available. Then I grabbed a couple of ball pythons, got into that a little bit. I kind of had retics forced on me. my brother had two, and then he got a job in Florida, so he couldn't take them with him. Mm-hmm. So he said, here, Matt, have them. And I liked them, but I never really took that dive into them. And once I had those two, I really kind of fell in love with the retics. So I started picking up some of those. And, you know, it evolves. You start liking other things. And so then I got a couple bull snakes. I just wanted some kind of bigger colubrids. And then I've got the Borneos.
Hell yeah.
Which me and Rob bond on.
Oh, yes. You've got some super nice Borneos.
Yes. And so that's it. So ball pythons, berms, retics, sprinkle a little bull snake in there. I scooped up recently, dabbling, putting my toes in the water, a little locality boa stuff.
Oh.
All right.
So, yeah, it did give me a cool little pair of Bolivians.
Oh, nice. Hell yeah. Bolivians are awesome.
They're pretty neat, man. So we'll see where that goes. But, that's pretty much it.
Hell yeah, dude.
I love Bolivians. They're just so beautiful. The Amarali are like, I'm not big on boas, but they're one of the few ones that I like actually really like.
Yeah. I think it's the short tail thing, right?
Yep. Like it's got to be. It's got to be.
Short tail boas.
But you know what? I also like the longicaudas, the long tail boas, too. So it just can't be standard tail length. It's got to be super long or really short.
Yeah. The spectrum, no medium.
It's like the scrubs. They got these super long tails, and then the short tails, they got these like little tiny nubby tails. So nothing in the regular tail range.
You have a ball python.
I do have a couple ball pythons. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to hide
it. They're kind of shorter tailed, though.
That's true. And then I got the corn snakes. So those are...
The corn snakes are your middle of the ground.
Very average.
That's where you balance it out.
Yeah, all right. So you've got... You've got both sides and the middle.
Yes.
So, all right. It's still covered. You're still covered. Oh, man. So I got to ask, so you started kind of with the berm thing. What was your draw to berms? I'm specifically asking this because Rob loves berms.
No.
Okay, interesting.
That's the one place where we differ.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting because I don't know many people who don't like the berms.
Me.
Because to go to the question, how I ended up with the berm. Sometimes I tell a lot of stories, but so back in the day when I first started going to Repticons, there wasn't a ton of shipping. I guess you could have shipped, I didn't know, but anyways, so like it was exciting to go because it's like, all right, I'm looking for this, I hope they have it. Like, I remember in 2001, so I'm in Atlanta. We drove all night to go to a Tampa Repticon because I wanted a Suriname boa. And so we rode 10 hours to get there, got it, and drove home. But anyway, so now when you go to a show, you can kind of, if you see something like, all right, well, let me research and you can, get it later. So it's not that impulse and that excitement.
Right, right.
So I said, all right, I'm going to Repticon, and I like the berms. I like the normals. So you couldn't ship. So it kind of brought back the nostalgia of it's here, you got to get it now because you can't go order it later, right?
Mm.
So I got one, and it was just so laid back and so chill, and just it's like it didn't care about anything. And so I was like, man, that's pretty neat. And then I kind of stumbled upon what the hypos looked like, and it just blew my mind. So I was like, all right, found one in Georgia, and allegedly it was like one of two. I'm sure there was more, but that just gives you an idea there wasn't many here. So I ended up hustling that one down, and I ended up getting another one right after that. But anyways, the third one I got, I know I was the sixth owner in 6 months. Wow. So they just kind of got passed around, right? Yeah, so it's like I got them, and she was just still just so laid back and so easygoing, and you think about what it had been through, which I don't know how well it was taken care of, probably well, but somebody didn't want it, and then somebody else didn't want it, and then you know how it goes, and then it ended up here, and just, I don't know, it seemed like it was just so forgiving, like, all right, wherever y'all put me, I'm going to be good, and that's where I just fell in love with the berms, and like I said, Georgia had kind of dried up with them, so I was like, well, this might be something I could pursue and kind of get a nice little stock going here. That's kind of how it just evolved, and I kind of saw some nuances in the pattern and stuff I might could line breed and work with, kind of like with like the Borneos. Mm-hmm. One of those things that kind of hits you a certain way and you run with it.
Hell yeah. That's cool. Usually it's I just wanted a big snake.
Yeah.
So, I can certainly appreciate that even more. Yeah, for sure.
I think that, the berms definitely got a bad rap from like a lot of the people who kept them in the like, you know, late '90s, early 2000s. And, now there's some people who are doing a lot more work with a lot of the morphs, mutations, kind of working on breeding the best of the best. And it's not that, you know, factory, like back in the day,
yes.
Albino Burmese pythons used to get cranked out, like,
yeah.
And normals, you could get them for like 60, 70 bucks and albinos for like 125 bucks, which is like,
wow,
crazy for like a big,
right,
snake. You'd think that you wouldn't want them to be that cheap. They shouldn't be, you know, that accessible to most people because they do get big.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think it's a little bit different, especially with the Lacey Act kind of scaring a lot of the bigger breeders from really cranking them out. Mm-hmm. Now that there's people who are just working on kind of doing what you're doing, it kind of commands a little bit more respect for them to the buyer because they're not looking at a $50 or $75 snake. They're looking to make a little bit,
right,
more of an investment. And I think that plays a huge role into who's getting them now as opposed to who was getting them and, you know, when I was growing up.
Yeah.
Because I knew a lot of people in my area that had got Burmese pythons because I wanted a big snake. And I was,
uh-huh,
just like, I don't like that.
Right. No, and it's interesting you say that because there really should be some type of barrier to entry. Like, we've got to keep these things, these snakes, the retics, these animals that are going to get bigger. At some point where somebody has to kind of, I don't know, do a double take on, do I want to spend that money to get this thing? And I think that, you know, that one that I had that had six owners, I think that's kind of what happened. Somebody wanted a big snake and it got there. They're like, well, hell, what am I going to do with this thing?
Yeah.
So somebody else like, well, I'll take it. And they get it for a little bit. And they're like, oh, this is a little different than I thought. And it just gets passed around.
Yeah.
Somebody just wants rid of it. So they do it cheap or whatever. That barrier to entry is pretty important. Keeping that price up. Cause they are going to get big.
Yeah.
They're a little cumbersome at times.
For sure. And at Nerd, that's kind of one thing that I decidedly chose when I started doing a lot of the sales there, was that I'm not selling normal retics for anything under $200, because I think that at 150 and under, people will just kind of buy it on an impulse. Usually if it's 200 or over, they at least put a little bit of thought,
mm-hmm,
into what I'm going to do with it, how I'm going to feed it, what I'm going to do to take care of it. And I get a lot of people who will call us and they'll say, can you just do it for 100? Because I know that I can buy them cheaper elsewhere. And I'm like, if you want to buy it from somebody else, then you do that. But I have that price for a reason and I haven't budged from it. I've tried to keep to that. If it's even just a straight normal, $200 or more is where I try and keep it at. It just makes people think a little bit more before they hit that buy button, you know?
I like that. I like that play. That's smart.
Because
it is, you know, when you're selling these things, you know, a decent year in retics, and people will, you can kind of tell the messages of people who are just trying to impulse, you know, on the wording. Sometimes it's like, you know, you got to do what's right by the animal too, you know, and that price point's a big, you know, diversion.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, if you can get that person to recognize that what they're about to embark on is not as simple as that little ball python.
Yeah.
And you know what's really challenging about it is baby retics are the sweetest, most amazing things. You fall in love with them.
Yeah.
But they're going to get a little bigger. And they're going to get a little cage, you know. They're going to have a little bit of a feeding response.
Yeah.
It's not quite as cute when they get a little bigger.
Yeah. suddenly your arm is the cute fluffy thing that
right,
thing wants to grab. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you'll realize that real quick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that that's something that's kind of changing now as we're going, is that a lot of people are seeing that, and it's some of the people are just like, "Oh, I started with ball pythons and now I want to get retics." And it's like, it's not the same. It's super duper not the same. It's like saying, you know, I got a Toyota Corolla and I'm getting a Ferrari next week. It's just not the same thing. You need to like do a little bit of research, do a little bit of learning, watch some videos, do something before you take that plunge, or maybe get something intermediate to kind of build yourself up to that point. Because working with a retic is like nothing like working with a ball python.
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Oof.
So I saw that you were doing some field herping while you're on your work, like vacations weekend.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So
I did, yeah.
Do you do a lot of field herping? I mean, I try during the summertime up here. We only get like what 2 months of good field herping, and then it's done. So I've been trying this summer. I've actually done a lot of field herping compared to the last like 8 years. But I love going out and seeing a lot of the native wildlife that we've got here.
Yeah, so I try to get out. I try to be pretty active anyway. So I do a lot of hiking. So I try to herp, but I'll be real honest. It's rare that I go out looking for a snake and find a snake. Majority of the snakes I've caught have been like on a bike ride or driving down the road just randomly. Like I'll go look, you know, for 4 or 5 hours in just a killer spot and not see anything. And then on the drive home, see one. but I do try to get out. There's a couple good spots around here. There's one of these trails that just goes down to this river, and a lot of people hike it. But I noticed randomly some tin, you know, and it's in like a, I guess you call it like a natural refuge type place. So I'm like, they surely don't have like let people leave trash here, so it's got to be there for a reason. Mm. And then the park sign had like snake signs by it. So I'm like, I wonder if they're like tracking or something like that. So anyways, I go there and piggyback off the tin they've laid out, and I usually do okay there. And then yesterday I was in Arkansas for work, and there's just some open fields, and Arkansas's a little cooler than Georgia, so I was like, man, this is probably pretty ideal. Mm. So let's go exploring. There's nothing else to do besides I'm in Springdale, Arkansas. There's nothing going on, so I'm gonna go to the hotel and go to sleep. So let me just walk around, and saw a couple. I guess they're we call them banded water snakes here. I imagine mm-hmm. that's what it was. Some type of Neurodia. Silt fence, man. If you ever see a silt fence laying down, it's money in the bank. Yep. I always catch snakes under those. but that was pretty cool. Might as well. While you're at work, go catch you some snakes.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Yeah. The other day I went to a new spot that I had never been to before. And I was like, I don't really know. Like, it was supposed to be just to go hiking, but whenever I go hiking, I'm like, I got to keep an eye out if there's any good field herping spots. So mm-hmm. we kind of looked around. There was like a little bog area, so we're hanging out and looking in the water and everything. I see a little painted turtle. I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. At least there's something here. It's not just like barren. And we get over to the trail, and we start walking up the trail, and there's a little side trail that goes off, and I see a tractor in a field, and I see these like cement fireplaces in the field. And I was like, jackpot, I'm going right over there. And I went over there, and I'm with my girlfriend Emily, and I like lift up this log, and I'm like, this looks perfect for salamanders. Pop it up, boom, spotted salamander right underneath it. And, like a little baby one. And I was like, duh, right there, yes. And she was like, how did you know that was going to be there? And I'm like, I just know.
Herper's intuition.
Yeah, herper's intuition. Right? I can tell that this is a spot. And it was like later in the day, so I knew there wasn't going to be any snakes there. But going through and looking, I was like, this is perfect for salamanders. And we found a big American toad too. And what else? We found 2 or 3 spotted salamanders and a couple red Fs, which are like the eastern newts, the larval stage of those. I love those. Yeah. They're so cool. And you know, I like finding snakes a lot. Like, those are probably my favorite thing to find, but I also like finding all the other weird random stuff too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Me too.
I wish we could find lizards.
Yeah, I do wish we could find
That's
lizards.
That's the downfall of being up here in New England.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, we have no native lizard species up here.
It gets too cold during wintertime.
No kidding. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yep. That's why anytime I've ever had the chance to go anywhere that lizards exist,
I need to
geek
see
out. Yeah. Even if it's just like a green anole, I'm like, woo, huh? Lizards!
Yes.
Right?
It was crazy when we did our Florida trip. We went to Zoo Miami. In the parking lot, there was like redheaded agamas everywhere.
Yeah.
Like everywhere.
No
and
kidding.
I was, it took everything for me to not chase them down because I'm like, oh man, we don't even get to see those. Like, those are like, you see them at a reptile expo. That's the only place you see any sort of bigger lizard just chilling
that's
out.
Pretty cool.
I was so geeked. I was like, we're on a time schedule. I can't waste my day chasing these agamas. But look at that one over there.
Yeah.
So my brother moved to West Palm.
Yeah.
And went down there to see him, and there's a basilisk down there.
Holy moly.
Oh man.
Yeah. I was like, what is that? I mean, you know, there's the iguanas all over the place too. Like pretty big ones. But yeah, the basilisk was really cool. Just to see one of those, pretty big one too. You know, just to randomly see that again. We were in a parking lot like you were, and there's a basilisk right there.
Jeez.
Pretty wild.
I don't know how I'd react to seeing that.
A
basilisk in a parking lot. I'd be like, so, this is cool.
I'd be like, I know it's faster than me. I'm not going to try.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man.
Whenever I go any place in the southern part of the U.S., I'm like, I need to spend as much time herping as possible, because in New England, we only get that 2-month window where I can find stuff, maybe 3 months if we're lucky, and then everything goes back into hibernation. And so, like, the whole winter time, I'm like, wow, I can go outside and find nothing. The earth is dead.
Yeah.
Well, we kind of have well, I think some people do pretty well, but there's almost the opposite here where it's too hot.
Yeah,
you have to go at night like real early in the morning, or you'll never see them.
Mm.
Yeah, I'd rather have that as an option.
Yeah, right? They're still around somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's yeah, I'd still rather have that as an option. That's like life goal.
Yeah.
Be in a space where you just have to go earlier in the day.
Yeah. Or at night.
Let me ask you this. If I catch a lizard, do I send you a picture so you can live vicariously, or is that like rubbing it in?
No.
It's both,
I
want to
see
but
it.
I'm okay with living vicariously through you.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So if I catch one, I'll shoot y'all a picture of it.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you see it far in the distance and have to send us grainy pictures.
Just
from
don't
zooming
ask the
in.
ID.
Because... Yeah.
Those are always the ID pictures that I get. But it's like, it's crazy to me because, like, during the winter time in New Hampshire, you know, like, not last winter, but the winter before, we had back-to-back blizzard, like, snowstorms where we got 3 foot of snow each time. So I'm looking outside at, like, almost 6 feet of snow on the ground,
Lord
and I'm like,
mercy.
How do any reptiles live here? Why do they
right.
live here?
Yeah.
This is a terrible place to live.
Right.
And they're just like, they're probably hiding below the frost line. It's cool. It's cool. And I'm like, no, it's not cool.
No, it's not okay.
They're
it's
insulated, okay. man. It's like an igloo. Six feet of snow. It just insulates you.
Yeah. That's probably true, actually.
I just look at them and I'm like, whenever I see them during the summertime, I'm like, how did you make it through winter?
Yeah.
I almost didn't make it through winter.
And they have to, like, just gorge themselves in that time because they're hibernating the rest of the time, I assume.
Yep.
Yeah,
they hibernate, like, 6-8 months a year.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
easily.
Yeah, because,
too bad of a deal, really.
Nah. I mean, you only got to worry about
getting
eaten. I
might sign up for that.
Yeah,
right.
You know, I got to just gorge myself for 3 months and then I can sleep the rest of the time?
Right.
Yeah. Not a bad gig. Yeah, not a bad gig.
So are you still in Arkansas right now?
No, flew back today.
Okay, cool. Because I was just going to say, I was looking at, I don't know if you know Graham Battison. He's like one of the short tail guys. But he just made an announcement. It was earlier today that he's been working with some guys who are putting in a big reptile facility called Reptile Gardens. And they just announced that they're going to be putting one in Texas, Baton Rouge, and in Arkansas. Expanding and making like really some of the largest reptile exhibits in the country. So I'm
That's
like
awesome.
Super shout out to Graham because he is the man and he is like amazing.
Wow.
But he's going to be bringing something interesting to Arkansas. So next time you go out there, you might be able to see some cool reptiles.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Hell yeah.
To branch out like that too and do it in 3 different states.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
I'm super excited to see what direction that goes in.
Hell yeah.
So you produced some really nice snakes, and for the Borneos, what was it like when you were hatching out your Borneos? What sort of things were going through your head then?
Man, that's a good question because there was so much going through my head because you don't really know what to expect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what was coming out, and then a quarter of their body, let's say, would come out, you know. And I'm like, oh, man, because I had used a whiteout. So it had that stripe. So I was like, these things are going to be so striped out. And I was going nuts. And then it comes out a little hard, and the stripe just stops at a quarter of the way.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, all right, that threw me for a loop. I had one that was like, I don't know if there's some granite-ish going on. You've seen the picture. I don't know what it is. And then there's like one that's like crazy light. And so there's no consistency in these things. So yeah, that's what's running through my head, and that's why I love it. You know, it's just, you don't know what's going to come out. You say, well, this one looks neat, let's keep that, let's run that, try it again. One of my favorite things, and I think it is because it's so all over the place, you know, I love normal berms, but they're gonna look a certain way, right? There's some variances. There's some colors and some pattern differences, but like the Borneos, you really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
No telling what's going to come out.
There's so much variability to them. Like, Dan Magano and I had paired up to do a joint project because he has a male ocelot and I have a female ocelot. And I was like, oh, sweet, breed them together and we'll make some crazy looking ocelots. And it's like, we produced four visual ocelots, one crazy looking thing that looks like nothing I've ever seen before, and then a bunch of like weird striped things. And I was like, that's not really what I was expecting.
Yeah.
That was fun. So when I was, I really liked the short tails. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, which niche I want to go to. And so I'd reached out to Matt, Philly Herps, and was like, hey, and you know, I didn't know a ton about him. I knew his stuff was so nice. I was like, tell me about, you know, the genetics. And he sends this response and it's very thorough, but I'm reading it and I'm like, Matt, I don't know what I just read. That's what I love about it, right? It's not like there's no set answer. So it's like, you know, that he's dialed it into kind of what you can expect. But at the same time, grab something you like, grab one that looks neat, throw them together and see what comes out. So I really like that. And then if you can dial it in like he's been able to do, and it looks like, you know, Dan and you as well, Rob, kind of dialed in some things so you can get it a little more consistent. You can start that line breeding process.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's kind of one of my draws to it too, is I don't have to go that direction Matt went. And when I picked up, I think I got a trio from Matt, but then I wouldn't get any more from him because I don't want to just do what he does.
Yeah.
I want some of his, and I don't want to pair the trio I got from him all together. I want to get some other stuff in there so that I'm not just doing what he does. And again, you know, there's no telling what's going to pop out. That was my mindset in it, at least. And that's what I really liked about it.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. I think that there's so much room for that when it comes to Borneos because there's so many interesting looks, and we're just starting to tap into like what directions you can go in with them. Because like people have been breeding the red blood pythons for like the morphs and even for color for 20, 30 years now, fairly consistently. And the Borneos have kind of been on the back burner. Not as many people have been digging into really seeing where you can go with them. I mean, Keith McPeak did a crazy amount, and Matt Minatola is doing a ton too. But that's like pretty much it. There's been a couple people who have done, you know, a lot in there as well. But as far as like really running with things like they've done with the Red Bloods or the Sumatran Short Tails, it just hasn't happened yet. And so that's the part that really draws me to the Borneos, because like people are not importing Blue Ghosts. They're not importing, you know, marbles or extreme marbles or ocelots or anything like that. Everything that you do with Borneos is unique to what you're doing. It's not something that, you know, if you've got a T-positive albino or a T-negative albino, they can import another one of those. And Golden Eyes pop up like all the time. Over the last 10 years, there's been so many wild-caught Golden Eyes that have popped up from the skin trade.
Yeah.
So if you've got Golden Eyes, you're competing with not only the people who are breeding them right now, but also the new stuff that's coming in. Where Borneos, it's like no one is bringing in ocelots. Matt Minatola has got that corner. That's his thing. Like, and the extreme marbles, they're not importing marbles or extreme marbles. You know, they're importing normal Borneos or maybe a striped Borneo. But that's pretty much it. It's not a whole lot of competition when it comes to importing, or you know, if people want to start breeding them, they have to buy established stock and get those genes that they're looking to work with, to go from there to build on whatever projects they're looking to get into. So that's one of the things that I really like about the Borneos. And that's what kind of keeps me coming back and like just constantly interested in them, you know?
Well, you brought up a good point. We were talking one morning about the albino.
Yes.
And I was, you know, honestly kind of a little disappointed. Like, well, it's not that bright. And you said, Matt, these are albinos that are from the mud-colored ones out in the wild.
Yep.
We haven't line bred these and brightened them up and take the really bright, nice ones that are established here and work in the albino in. And I was like, oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Right? just another example of how we're just kind of stepping into what the Borneos can actually do.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you do that for 10 years, you'll start seeing that that really brighten up and get the colors that you're seeing in the others.
Mm-hmm. I think that is what direction that kind of needs to go in with the albino project and like the mocha project. I think that when someone takes it and really puts it into some contrasted animals or some animals with some nice color on their head and really work that in there, I think that they're going to really surprise people with how beautiful they can be.
It's like you said, just getting started, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's really cool to be like on such a ground floor of a project. Mm-hmm. That's not just a specific morph, because that really isn't a thing with the Borneos, but as a species.
Yes.
There's still so much work that can be done. I think it's definitely cool to be right in there
and watching
it happen. You know, and that's because that really isn't able to happen with many other species. You know
people come out with a new ball python morph and everyone's like, yeah, we know,
yeah,
there's exactly. another ball python morph.
And
you know what, I think that if you really wanted to rattle up the ball python world, what you'd need to do is take a morph or a color variant and really work with bringing out the intensity of it. So say you got pastels, but just work with like the brightest pastels that you can find, where when you're producing them, you're producing these crazy yellow things and you're like, well, it's just a single gene pastel and it blows everyone else's pastels out of the water.
Right.
Or you know, working with you know, a striped animal that's not necessarily a morph, but really getting that stripe dialed in through your breeding. And just trying to breed that stripe to be nice and clean or something like that, you know, where no one can compete with you because they haven't been doing the breeding that you've been focusing on. That's really the way to take it. Like, I think that they're doing it with the retics. A lot of the guys who work with the tiger retics are just trying to breed the ones that are like, their back is blown out. So it's not like the old school tigers that had like the spots, like the spotted stripe down the back.
They've got
like a full stripe, almost like a super tiger. And that's like more common now, where you see a lot of the tigers have really thick stripes down the back, almost like a super.
It's that line breeding again.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think
the best of the best, and do it over time. And it evolves into just really incredible animals. Like you said, it's like, it's just a single gene.
Yep, exactly. You
know, just been doing it for a minute.
Yep. So what projects are you looking forward to for this upcoming season with some of your berms or some of your retics?
What's going to be... all right, so a good opportunity coming up with the berms. So I've got, in 2017... I produced like this really weird clutch with just things that I hadn't seen before. And I don't know why they look like that. So like, I've got like this really light neon radioactive looking hypo. And then, you know, the leopard stuff. So those are all coming of age this year. I held a good big back. I don't know how it's going to go. They are, they're not big. So I don't know if there's some dwarf blood in there or what, but it's going to be really interesting to see. So I'm really excited about that. I've got, what do I have? 4 or 5 females that are a little over three now. So we'll give them a shot this year. Hopefully they cycle. We'll see if we get something with that. So that's what I'm really excited about. Got some good opportunities with the retics. One of my really, really good friends, you know, just decided he was going to go a different direction and gave me an opportunity to take over some of his collection. So that's John DiMiglio. I got some of his stuff. And like, he's kind of the guy who really, I guess, got me into the retics or schooled me on it, showed me the nuances. And so he was just this guy, and he's an incredible dude, and he did it right. He got him his babies, and everything he got was from the best of the best breeders. So everything's super high end. Me and him just kind of formed this relationship, and his stuff's so high end that he'd be like, hey, Matt, you know, do you want this lavender motley produced by Eric Herzog? And I'm like, well, you know, I got a cage open, you know, how much you want for it? And he's like, you can have it. And just his stuff was so high end that he's giving me these incredible animals because he doesn't have room for some stuff that, you know, $1,000, $2,000 animals. So that's just the type of guy John was. And so anyways, he just really had this eye for getting incredible animals. And so I've been fortunate enough to be able to take that over. And so there's some cool retic stuff I'm going to be able to do. I got a couple calicos, you know, don't know what they're going to end up doing. Mm-hmm. Got this really weird guy. Was it produced up there at Nerd? The Golden Child Orange Ghost Stripe that's like speckled.
Yeah, the calico.
Oh, yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've got that snake. So that's going to be neat. I don't know. So, yeah, so just got some cool retic stuff going on. But the berms would be what I'm really excited about because that is kind of what I would call, like we talk about the line breeding, just something that I fell on. This one snake looked really neat, and I just followed it past a couple owners, so I had an opportunity to get it. And then there was this other one, the male, that's super light. Basically, this pet store here, who's they bred, and the owner said, come check out, they had a caramel, which we didn't have any caramels in Georgia. They said, check it out, see if you want it. So I went over there, didn't want it, but they had this snake that was basically really high priced, and that was basically because it wasn't for sale. Well, the owner wasn't there that day, so I told the guy, wrap it up, I'm taking it home, because I'm the guy that's silly enough to pay that much for it. So anyways, it turned out really well for me, and I really was waiting for them to reach out and be like, hey, man, you can bring that snake back. But they didn't, and so I'm excited about the burns because this is two snakes that I just kind of – they caught my eye. I put them together. Weird stuff popped out. Now we get to see how much farther it can go. So that's what I'm most fired up about. I don't really have – I don't guess anything else really going on. The Borneos don't have anything going on with them this year. So it's really just the berms and the retics. And I'm known for sneaking a ball python clutch in about every other year. They turn out decently well. Don't know how I pull that off. My methodology with the ball pythons is I say, what would be the worst pairing? What would nobody put together? And then I do that. And it's actually turned out pretty well for me. I got a world's first on one of them, which is weird. Something nobody would ever put together. That's probably why it's a world's first. And then this year I had one clutch. They were just really pretty snakes.
Hell yeah.
That's I think that really is the key. I was talking to a buddy of mine not too long ago, and we were just talking about kind of where ball pythons have come and where they're going now. And I'm like, man, you know, we were just talking about this, and we were recording another episode, just kind of like, what, as social media progresses and so many people are showing off their stuff, one of the things that has remained true for the better part of the last decade has been the most publicized videos of the reptile industry are often, here's how to be a ball python breeder.
Yep.
And right. Here's like the coolest stuff you can make. And I was like, while it's totally cool to see, you know, some crazy whacked out combos of some really high end morphs, you know, the people that are sold out to just producing pretty snakes, you know, like they've found that, you know, just like with the Borneos and like what you're doing with the berms, like you just find that thing that catches your eye and you run with it.
Uh-huh.
You know, like those are the people that I feel like you're seeing that have withstood the test of time, so to speak,
right?
You know, cause I think we've all been in it long enough to know a handful of people that have been like, oh, I'm going to go, you know, balls deep in this project and sink all this money. And then 2 years later, they're like, oh, I'm getting out of it. You know, this was a waste of money, waste of time. So I really commend that. Like I know for me, now that's where I've really been able to focus my own collection of ball pythons is like, I want to see this and the coolest kinds of these. And that's, you know, that's where I'm finding my truest, happiest self with multiple projects that I'm working on. Cause I have too many snakes, but, I think really like we have to really start kind of promoting that. You got to get into it because you like it.
Yes.
Not because there's an opportunity to make money, you know, because regardless, the industry is gaining popularity at an amazing speed, you know. So whether you're producing a clutch of single gene pastels or a clutch of, you know, Pompeii, blah, 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 you'll be able to sell that animal. You know, you might have to sit on it a little while, but you know, if you are happy with what you're producing, you like what you're working with, then there shouldn't be anything better than that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, I think about that that caramel sunfire retic I got from you, and man,
yes,
I can't open that bin enough. Like, you know, like that snake just screams every amount of perfection to me, and I'm like, ah, this is just one of the coolest retics ever. And man, like, for me, like, my thought process is like, I'm already like, I know exactly what I want to do with that animal and make, like, the, in my opinion, some of the coolest potential combos. You know, just getting into something like Orange Ghost Stripe and seeing where that can go. You know, I'm like, that's where I'm like, ah, I'm gonna have way too many retics when this project is said and done.
Well, you know, that you touch on something that's just, it's huge, and maybe not just in reptiles, in life in general. Like, you have to do what fires you up, because you know, yeah. It's kind of a grind in a sense. Like, I wake up at 3:30 every morning and I clean for about an hour, and it's every day.
Mm.
But it's things that I'm really excited, like you said, to open that tub and to clean all that poop and meat, right? It's just, if you really love it, you don't get burned out.
Yeah.
If you really love it and you're just chasing what fires you up, and that may be a Borneo, it may be, you know, something obscure that, you know, isn't really mainstream, but if that's what fires you up, you'll be able to do it day in, day out, see it through. You'll be excited every day. And that's where, you know, if people are chasing money or, hey, this is hot right now, that's fine. But if you're just doing what you love, the money will follow you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you're chasing your deal. So if it's something you're fired up about, okay, then you're going to put more effort into it, more excitement into
100%.
It. 100%. And if you're doing it for the money, then the money doesn't come, then you're frustrated and you don't get it. But if you're doing what you love and the money doesn't come, it doesn't matter because you love it, fine, I'll keep them all. Yeah. I love these things, right? And eventually the buyer will come or whatever. But I think that's key. And, you know, I talked a little bit on how I kind of took over this collection of somebody who was incredibly selective, the best of the best. And there's some of these animals that I have that I picked up because of something I saw or some product I wanted to do that are just significant notches below some of the stuff I've acquired. And I find myself gravitating to mine more than some of these higher end ones because I didn't pick that. I didn't buy into that. That wasn't my project. Right. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So, oh yeah. 100%.
That really opened my eyes. Cause I have some, you know, like I said, got some really high end stuff, and some of those I'm not as fired up about as ones that I've grown up, or one that, because when you buy one, you're thinking like, okay, here's what I want to do with it. Here's this. And you just have this kind of emotional attachment to it.
Mm-hmm.
So you keep that to the snake and everything that you're doing with it. Whereas if you just like, hey, this is hot right now, and you get it because it's hot, you may not. Now that may fire you up, and so you may have that attachment because it's hot. But at the same time, if you're just doing what you like, a Borneo, which I think there's like, what, six or seven of us that like Borneos, there might be eight now, but you know, like, that's just what you like, you're going to put all this into it, and you're going to reap the benefits of that. So I think that's a huge point that you made. You know, you gotta really chase what you like, and what excites you, and you'll be able to do it for a long time. And if something's burning you out, it's because you don't love it as much. So, you know, move on from that project and stay what keeps you engaged.
100%. And even to piggyback on that, you know, like when I was teaching music full time, and I would have students who, you know, as they were progressing on their instrument, they were like, oh, you know, I want to upgrade from a student model horn. You know, it's generally very inexpensive, whatever, they want to upgrade to that next level horn. And they would always say, you know, well, what do you recommend? And, you know, of course, as the teacher, I'll offer my recommendation. But one of the things I would also say too is, you know, you've got to go to a music store, or, you know, I can recommend a music store to go to, but you've got to actually like try out some horns, and you've got to fall in love with the horn.
Right.
And you've also got to ask yourself, you know, if I get this horn, is the sound I'm getting out of that horn going to make me want to open up that case and practice every day?
Yes.
You know, and like, if you're just going to be like, you know, I'll get to it, versus like, man, I can't wait to like get on my horn today and you know, play this thing, whatever. And to amazingly, but also it didn't totally shock me all that much, they didn't know how to take that response.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're often so force-fed this is what you need to do. It's right. Just this. You can't deviate from this. You know, like, I know for myself personally, when I was, you know, coming up in trumpet land, you know, my teachers recommended, okay, you get this brand of horn. You want this model. You want this. And it wasn't until I was in college that I was really like, okay, man, like, I'm really starting to do this for myself. And I have an idea of what I want, and it's not what I've got right now. You know,
right.
And it wasn't until I talked with somebody who was invested in it that I could talk to and be like, this is what I want out of my horn, that they were like, I've got exactly what you're looking for. Come try it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I tell my students, I was never a gear junkie until I was in college. Because yeah. That's when I was able to, like, figure out all the nuances of what made a horn sound a certain way.
Right.
Why, when I did this, it did this, you know. And then it was like, hell yeah, man, I can't wait to grab this horn every day, you know.
That mirrors the reptiles in those projects exactly, right?
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
When I say it's a grind, it's not if you love it. I can't wait to get up and clean these things, right?
Exactly.
Because it's what you want to do.
Exactly.
That's, yeah, that's that is exactly the same thing.
Yeah. 100%. It's amazing the similarities we can bring in from one walk of life to another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people have asked me, like, when I went from, obviously, again, teaching music full time to coming up to work at Nerd, people were like, man, like, isn't that such like a crazy life shift? And I'm like, well, not really.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously I'm not playing trumpet for 8 hours a day, so my face isn't numb, you know, but, you know, but, I love what I do, you know, like I have a passion that's been driving me for X amount of years already, you know, so it's nothing new. All I'm doing is shifting a little bit more of my focus from one aspect to the other, but the get up and go is still the same, you know, that passion is still the same, you know, and I still work as a musician, so it's not like I had to give one up.
Yeah.
You know, if I had to give one up, maybe I would feel a little bit differently, but I'm lucky enough where I didn't have to give one up for the other.
Right.
You know, so it really is just get up, go. Like, let's mm-hmm. do this.
Yep, excited to take it on. And, you know, another cool thing about the reptiles is, you know, you take you, Jeremy, and Rob, and myself, we're probably three different kind of guys. But mm-hmm. we do have like a synergy between us, and the reptiles is that commonality. And you start to find, like, I don't know anything about music. I'm horribly musically talented. But as you were describing that, I got every bit of what you were saying,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's just, there's so many, like you said, the nuances of outside things that bring us kind of all together in this, you know, whether it's like kind of like the working out stuff with me, a lot of the similarities there where, you know, me and you can, I don't know, again, kind of have that synergy with two totally opposite things, but the reptiles bring it together. And I'm like, dude, I totally get it. Trumpets. Yeah. Got to make your sound. I get it.
Hell yeah, man.
But I have no idea.
Hell yeah.
But I know what you mean, but I have no idea.
Yeah. 100%. 100%. Oh, man. So I got to ask, just for my own selfish desire, what got you into the caramel retic stuff? Was that just like one of those things that just kind of fell in your lap too? Or was that like, I like this project. I want to work with this project.
Both.
Cool.
Yeah. So definitely just the color and as yours ages. And by the way, if we can pause for a minute, thanks for that plug saying how nice.
Oh, hell yeah.
You got for me was very nice. I have more available by the way, but anyway, the color on those,
yeah,
when they get older, it's I mean, it's caramel, it's beautiful. There's a purplish, brownish, yellowish, and so when I saw that, and then again, one of the coolest things about the retics, I think one thing that makes them so diverse for a breeder and for projects and stuff is the compatibility of all the albinisms. With the caramel and the orange glow, and then you have the mocha and the macchino and the, you know, the purples and the whites, you can just put it all together. But yeah. So kind of taking that darkness to another level is what really made me like it. So John had them, so I'm eyeing his like crazy. And then, mm-hmm. so then I had the opportunity to, so they did kind of fall in my lap, but I was actually drooling over them for a minute. So luckily, I got the whole kit and caboodle with that one.
Hell yeah.
So there's just, you know, I'm also, like I, you know, I've kind of mentioned with the ball pythons, like just do kind of fly under the radar type stuff. I love the genetic stripe with the with the retics. Some people, I think it's one of those things where like you either just like fascinated and completely 1000% engaged in it, or you're like, oh, it's kind of neat. And so I love them. And so really that's where the caramel kind of came in. I was like, okay, we need to get that in the G stripe and really darken that up. So yeah, that's kind of where that came into play.
All right, so I'm saying it now on the podcast. When you make caramel G stripes, you have my number.
Deal. You're the first to know.
Dude, I'm looking at the picture of that lavender sunfire genetic stripe, and I'm not crazy about retics or retic morphs, but that thing glows. Like, absolutely
crazy, right?
Glows.
Blew my mind.
Gorgeous.
Hell yeah.
That was really the retic project. I'm doing air quotes because I got – so my brother gave me a purple male, which is just classic, right? You can't go wrong with it. Incredible animal. And then he had, I don't know why I had it. He, for some reason, he had got a female white sunfire head G-stripe. Hmm. And so I, you know, he gave me those. And I was like, well, what's this G-stripe? And I was like, whoa, that's pretty neat. And so I picked up a male. And that girl just, she never cycled. She never cycled. And this year, I was cleaning her. And I took a picture and I sent it to my brother. I said, Sonny, I think she's cycling. And he's like, really? She just had this look. And so anyway, I put her in and put a male in. So I put the male in there for 2 seasons, and she wrapped him up one time, man. I was like, Lord have mercy, let me get you out of here. And so anyways, 5 minutes later, they're locked up. And so I was like, okay, you know, we'll finally get to see what this looks like. So Rob, I appreciate your appreciation of it, because I didn't know it was going to turn out that nice. And
it is.
It really did. Yeah.
That
and I got 4. 3 lavenders and the 1 sunfire lavender G stripe, and it ain't going nowhere.
No, yeah. I wouldn't, man. Those things are still, and I'm just picturing them at like 10 feet, and they're going to be ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you, by the way.
Yeah.
I walked that line of like, I don't know whether to say thank you, but I'm as fired up as you are. I'm like, yeah, right? It's cool.
It is cool. Absolutely. No, don't you should toot your own horn. That thing's freaking amazing.
Hell yeah. Yep.
Just like I drew it up. I planned it the whole time.
Yep, there it is. The master plan.
Right. Yeah. Instead of coming out, I was like, what in the world is happening?
Yeah.
Like, bask in the revenants.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Have there been any other things that you hatched out that have like really just like got you like that, where you're like, wow, this thing is as good as I was expecting it to be?
So yeah, so really with the retic, the first retic clutch I had, so again with the albinisms being compatible, it opens up a lot of opportunity for variety within a clutch. So I did it was a platinum Mochino. So the Mochino, if you don't know, or if my listener doesn't know it, it's mocha and either white or purple. Well, this one's white. Mm. And then I did it to a lavender, which is purple and white, motley. And so anyways, getting to the point, that whole clutch, I only hit like two. There was 2 of 2 things. That makes sense. The rest was, I just had 1 of it. And so that one was incredible. So it's like, you had this idea, oh, I'd be cool if I made that. And it's like, oh, got it. And then it's like, well, no way I'd hit that. Oh, got it. So it was like, I think I had like 25, and there was like 20 different varieties in it.
Wow.
So that one was really fun. And then, so it's one of those where you open the tub like, whoa. And then you open the tub like, whoa. How about that one? Whoa. Because there's nothing of the same.
Yeah.
And then after they have their shed, they look way better. And then, you know, retics get brighter as they grow. And so it's like, maybe I don't want to sell that one. Maybe I will keep that one. I might have 6 or 8 of those still.
Oh,
just
man,
tucked away in the, like, I'll decide later stack.
Yeah.
Not that many, but, you know, might as well ride it out for a little bit.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah,
definitely that one was pretty neat.
Got some Borneos in that I'll decide later stack.
You don't say, Rob.
and Rob, too, with the Borneos, you kind of have to, because they look so different. They take what? A century to shed anyway.
Yeah, roughly.
Give or take. And then their color develops so much over that, you know, 6-8 months. Mm-hmm. Like I think it, you know, at least, and I had a small clutch, but so I knew right off the bat I wasn't gonna sell it. I think I had 5, and so I was like, I'll just, you know, ride this out. And it's just like they just kept changing color. Like, where's this coming from? And the darks kind of bleed in gradually. Yeah.
Hell
so,
yeah,
I think you almost have to keep them for a year or so.
Pretty much. Oh, yeah.
Well, if you're stacked like you are, you probably can afford to move some. After what you guys produced.
Yeah, and you know, I produced 3 clutches of Borneos this year, and I'm looking at them like, I don't really want to let go that many of these. I mean, I've sold a couple, but I'm like, I don't really want to sell the rest of these that much. I like them a lot, and I know that they're my marble clutch and my granite clutch have gone through their first sheds now. And then my clutch that hatched first, my blue ultra clutch, they're just starting to go through their first sheds now, and they're like 5 months old now.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, okay, you guys need to hurry up because everyone else is already shed.
Yeah.
Catch up.
Now, if you rewind to before any of these things hatch, Rob,
I only wanted to keep a couple.
Hold on to
a couple,
maybe 4.
Yeah.
Famous last words.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I just remember as when he's like sending me pictures of stuff, I'm like, oh man, that's really cool. Oh man, that's really cool. He's like, I don't know how many I'm keeping now.
Yeah.
Borneo. Well, you know, and it goes back to when we originally were talking about Borneos and how cool it is because there's so much opportunity. And you just hatched out, you know, snake after snake. That's like, well, there's opportunity there. There's opportunity there. Where do I go with this?
Yeah. I'm really curious to see where it goes, and especially with some of the stuff that I'm working with. I'm hoping that I can kind of nail things down a little bit more and really make some cool stuff because I'm not trying to run in the same line. Like, I do want to make some marble stuff because I really like the marble stuff, even though, you know, Matt's doing his thing and there's a couple other people who have got marbles. I really want to produce a little bit of those. And then some of the other stuff that I'm working with, I see a direction that I can go in, and I'm excited to see what the future holds.
Well, as I've, you know, eyeballed your production, you see the marble and some oscillate-ishness in there, but it's almost like you have kind of hit on a little different angle. It's like it pulls a little bit of what I've already seen, but there's a little something different going on there.
Oh, yeah.
It's unique.
Yes. I love that about him. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
I see what you're doing over there.
He's picking up what I'm putting down. You know. So are you tempted by any other projects to get into, like any other species, or are you trying to just like keep it in your lane and just do what you're doing?
So yes, that was all inclusive. There's other species, but I'm also trying to say, Matt, dial in and make sure you, like you said, stay in your lane. I would say one thing, if it is, it's an obvious drawback. I don't want to sound too negative, but with the retics, they're big.
Yes.
So there's only so many.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you are working projects, you have to be pretty dialed in on that project, especially if you're wanting to depth in it, like we talked about with you know, taking one gene and just making it better and better and better. Mm-hmm. So there's only so far you can go. Like I said, you know, I say, so that G-stripe clutch, I don't think I've sold any from it. And it was like 15 babies. Yep. So I'm just kind of watching them. I'll sell some eventually. But anyways, so that at some point, those are going to get bigger, like we talked about in the beginning, right? These are going to be big snakes. So there's that realization. So, okay, you know, would it be better to, you know, dial this in and just work your G-stripe stuff and then bring in other opportunities? So, again, that's, you know, that's where I picked up those Bolivians, you know. So that's something I might want to look at. Especially, it's really cool. Those haven't been able to be imported since the 80s. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's limited stock. So whatever we can do to kind of preserve that. Mm-hmm. So I'm always looking, you know, this, I'm a lifer, so it's not one thing that got me into it. It was dinosaurs. So that's obviously pretty vague. So, I just kind of like them all. And then that's kind of how I got the Borneos. So I'd been eyeing them for a minute and then, just wasn't really sure, you know, what to do. And there's, a girl who had bought some berms from me here and she had gotten a super stripe from Matt, and she had to, you know, make some moves, and so I ended up, I was like, well, let me get this one and see if I enjoy keeping it. and I really enjoyed keeping it. And so that's when I started. I was like, all right, well, let's run this. Let's get in and get some more. And so that's kind of where I'm at with the boas. Picked up those, and we'll see if I enjoy that. That's where how I got some bull snakes, you know. Let's see if these are fun to keep. And it turns out they're really fun. I think the catch to that little strategy, though, is they're all really fun to keep. So you never really cut yourself off.
Yeah.
Spreading and spreading. So, yeah, I think you asked projects and if I'm going to stay in my lane. And I think I didn't answer, but I kind of answered.
That's
we didn't really resolution that. I just said a little bit of both.
Yeah, which
that's
is a fair.
Fair
answer.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's totally yeah, fair okay. answer. Yeah,
we'll take it.
Oh man. So all right. So we're rounding out the our time, but before we go, we ask everybody one question, and that question is: what in the realm of reptile, be it something in your own collection or something you're witnessing online, because that's all COVID allows us to do is be online. What in the realm of reptile has you excited about reptiles?
Wow. What in the, all right. So if I may,
yes.
see if this applies, this right now, what we're doing, it really excites me, right? Cause here we get an opportunity. It's Friday night. Usually clean snakes or, you know, just watching TV, and here we are getting to hang out with you guys. Talk snakes.
Yeah.
It's been very pleasant and not forced or fake. It's just us chatting
just
it up.
Chilling.
And that's what excites me about it, right?
Making those connections.
And like I said, kind of probably three different dudes, but we're here together and it's just kind of flowing, a lot of synergy and just a really enjoyable conversation. And that's what kind of reptiles does, you know. We got George is a pretty tight knit group, and so we have down to my buddies, we do Friendsgiving every year, and it's the snake breeders, and
that's awesome.
So we'd all just hang out, right? And it's just it kind of pulls people together that, you know, otherwise may not be. And so I've built some good relationships, and I don't even know how we started chatting it up. Borneo's obviously, but yep. I don't know, I slid in your DMs or something. And then, you know, I wake up and I say, did I just dream that me and Rob were herping? Why does that happen? So it was very vivid. I don't know what we caught, but apparently for some reason I only remembered you, and that's really weird. I don't mean to make it awkward.
Yeah.
But
we're out there, we're doing it, you know, we're catching things. It's not always about finding things. It's about getting out there and having fun with the people that you're looking with, honestly.
The fellowship, right?
Yeah.
And whether it's real or subconscious, it happened. And even so Jeremy, I didn't know who you were. You're messaging me about snakes, and you know how these messages go sometimes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Some interesting ones. But I just remember thinking, this is honest truth. It's like, well, that guy's pretty cool. You know, that we it just flowed and it's pretty funny. You're like, well, I'll sleep on it, I'll marinate on it. And anyways, it just was pretty smooth. So anyways, what excites me about it, I think Jess in the realm, or it's the fact that we can do things like this, and it's natural, you know.
Yeah,
I don't
yeah.
know. Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm with it.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
You know? Yeah.
And
this has been a lot of fun, and I don't know that we'd ever talk otherwise, but, you know, here it
true.
Is, brought us
here
together.
It is.
Right.
Yeah. And I'll make a really quick deviation. When I was messaging you about all that caramel stuff, I was like sitting at the airport, and I'm like, I have to board this plane. I hope that snake is still gonna be there when I land, because there's no Wi-Fi on this damn flight.
I was like, man, I got you. Just, you know, sleep on it, marinate. You know, we'll talk about it.
Yeah. No, I was like, I landed, and I was like, let's go, bro.
Right now.
Let's go.
Oh, and then you. You know, sometimes you ship out these incredible snakes and people take a picture. Luckily, you, I don't know what algorithm you have where you found the exact position of the sun and the season in which to take the most perfect video of this thing. So I appreciate that. Yeah, that's pretty incredible.
Most definitely, man.
We have to practice.
Oh, yeah, we have to practice taking good photos. Otherwise, Kevin gets mad.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Send a snake to somebody and they take a picture. It's like, oh, come on, man. Why'd you take that on the dark side of the moon?
Right?
Oh, but you nailed it.
Oh, man. Well, thank you, man.
Oh, man. So if people want to find out more about you, and if they maybe want to pick your brains or like see what you got available, where should they look you up on social media and otherwise?
Yeah, so Facebook or Instagram. I'm probably a little more active on Instagram. Peach State Pythons.
Hell yeah.
That's it. Yeah, that's really it. Still ask for a number, but I don't know if I use a number very often anymore.
Nah.
It's all social media. So
yeah,
hit me up there.
Sweet. Sounds good, man. Cool. It's been awesome talking to you. We're going to have you on again. Thank you very much for your time tonight.
Yeah, appreciate y'all. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, take most care. Definitely.
Have a good night.
All right. See y'all.